Hello, I'm Dr. Ken Berry. For the next hour, you are going to have access to the minds of a medical doctor and a PhD nutrition researcher. And we're going to be discussing all things immune system, things that you can do to strengthen and make your immune system smarter, and things you can do to weaken your immune system. And so I hope that you will just sit back and relax for this hour and enjoy this conversation and maybe learn a few things. Tell me in the comments where you're watching from, what city, what state, what country. I love to get a feel for who's with us. And I have the great honor of having another conversation today with Dr. James D. Nicolantonio. I'm going to bring him on in just a second. If you know someone who is not treating their body in such a way that optimizes their immune system, I encourage you to share this video with them, send them an email or a text message really quickly and say, hey, get on Dr. Berry's YouTube and Facebook and learn about how you're supposed to actually eat and live your life in order to have a very smart, very strong immune system to protect you from all the things out there that would do you harm. Now, without further ado, let me bring on the good professor. Hello, Doc. How's it going?
Good, Ken. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to talk to you again. I think today's topic is very important always, but especially so with the events that we've encountered in the year 2020. And I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to have a conversation about this. For those one or two people in the listening audience who don't know who you are or what you do, give us a brief CV and why we should care what you say.
So I'm a cardiovascular research scientist at St. Luke's Mid-America Heart Institute, and I publish on nutraceuticals and nutrients that are important for our health, including our immune health. And I recently published several academic papers on which nutrients are important for our immune function and immune system. And that's sort of led me to publish this most recent book, The Immunity Fix.
Yeah. And I have my copy right here. And I love the logic of the layout of this book. And I want to ask you several questions about different chapters in the book to kind of help people understand. I think many people out there think that your immune system is this nebulous unknown. Like, I don't know, either I've got a good one or I've got a bad one. I don't really think anything I do or eat or don't eat, I don't think that really has any effect. I think it just does what it does, and I either suffer or, you know, succeed based on what it does. And I think nothing could be further from the truth. I think that your message that you can actually do things to strengthen your immune system, to make it smarter, to make it more apt to catch an invader sooner rather than later, I think all those things are vital for people to know. So let's start off first and foremost with what I consider to be one of the most important factors in having a strong, intelligent immune system. And that's insulin resistance, hyperinsulinemia, eating a diet that's too high in carbohydrates, thus spiking the blood sugar, therefore spiking the insulin, and all of the deleterious effects that come from that. Tell us what we need to know about this.
Well, I think you touch on a really important point, Ken, and that is the media sort of says there's two types of people. You either are someone who wears a mask, all right, and is protected, and someone who doesn't. And then no one talks about your own metabolic health, controlling your immune health, and your own nutrient status. And what me and you are talking about, and what me and you have known for many years, is that maintaining good metabolic health is going to also improve your immune health. And so studies have been coming out showing that if you have metabolic syndrome, which is a constellation of three or more of five different risk factors, that would be elevated blood glucose, blood pressure, waist circumference, triglycerides, and low HDL. If you have three or more of those risk factors, you are at a 3.5-fold higher risk of dying from COVID and a 4.5-fold higher risk of ending up in the ICU. And what you and I preach, ketogenic diets, low refined carbohydrate, low sugar diets are going to help fix metabolic syndrome.
Yeah, and it's kind of stunning when you watch the mainstream media's coverage of the virus that is engulfing and consuming us all, there's just rarely any mention of, you can actually treat the terrain, your body, your own immune system. You can actually do things to strengthen it. And they'll talk about weird little things like, some root from the Himalayan mountains or some berry from Tasmania, but they never want to talk about, it's vital what foods you eat and what food-like products you avoid. I find it very odd that they're not even interested in having that discussion at all, because as we all know, they have beaten the virus topic to death multiple times. I mean, they've talked about every facet of this thing except that one supremely important facet. I mean, I'm not even going to ask you why you think that is, but I would love for all the listeners to just consider for a second why. Yeah, I mean, they've literally talked about the color of your drapes with relation to this virus, but yet they haven't mentioned that you can actually eat certain foods and avoid other foods and double or triple your strength of resisting it or fighting it off should you contract it. So I've made a couple of videos on this channel, on my YouTube channel, about when you eat a high carbohydrate meal, and that immediately blunts your innate immune system's ability to respond. It slows down your macrophage's ability to attach, to roll, to migrate through the endothelial lining and then to migrate to where the infection is. This happens immediately after a high carb meal and lasts for hours. And you would think just that one key thing, you would think some of the big news networks would want to talk about that. So since they won't, we will. How about that? So walk us through some of the cell and molecular steps and why trying to eat a low carb diet is so important for immune strength.
Right. And I think what you're touching on too, Ken, is in the United States, we're not doing as well as other countries in regards to our mortality rate because we're so sick, we're so metabolically unhealthy. And really that's the differentiation. If you looked across the globe and everybody had the same mortality rate, okay, fine. Maybe there isn't anything you can do. But in the US, we're suffering much worse outcomes from coronavirus. And part of it has to do, like you said, high carbohydrate, high sugar diets. Now, what ends up happening, as you said, immediately your lymphocytes and your natural killer cells don't work as well. Essentially, their cytotoxicity goes down. Their ability to engulf pathogens goes down almost immediately. Long-term, what ends up happening when you have high insulin levels is you start kicking out nutrients, and our immune cells use nutrients in order to fight infections. That's how this works. Particularly, they use magnesium. Magnesium in the actual immune cell controls what's called the natural killer receptor, which is on both natural killer cells and CD8 T killer cells. And people who have chronically low magnesium in their immune cells have chronic Epstein-Barr activation and have a significant increase in lymphoma. So high sugar diets with high insulin levels causing you to lose magnesium in the urine is going to decrease the magnesium in your immune cell. So just from that aspect alone, with 50% of the population already being deficient in magnesium, you can see how these high sugar diets are just taxing your magnesium status. They also reduce vitamin D, vitamin C. They lower other minerals, selenium, copper. It's not just like empty calories. This is like a tax on your nutrient status.
Yes. And the effect is immediate after a high carbohydrate meal and lasts for hours. And I think it's so important that people really get that this is not, and this is not in any way theoretical. I mean, I link to research studies on those YouTube videos about immunity. This is not up for debate. This is established human physiology. And when you eat a high carb meal, you immediately blunt your immune system's ability to react to and fight against any infection, whether it's viral, fungal, or bacterial. And I think I just really want people to grasp that and understand that this is not theoretical. This is not a hypothesis. We've known this for decades and decades that your immune system is weakened when you eat a high carbohydrate meal, because all the carbohydrates are going to convert into sugars. And if you eat too much sugar at a given setting or multiple times a day, you have a weaker immune system than if you did not do that. And that's one of the hundreds and hundreds of reasons I'm such a big fan and such a big advocate of a low carbohydrate, ketogenic, ketovore, carnivore diet, because when you're eating a species appropriate amount of carbohydrates, everything works better, including your immune system.
Absolutely.
So let's talk now about the omega-6, omega-3 issues with the immune system. Okay, you've got a chapter in the book about this, and I think this is very important for overall health, but absolutely for immune health as well. Walk us through this.
So, I mean, as you are well aware, we evolved to eat omega-6 to omega-3 ratio in balance of about 1 to 1, perhaps 4 to 1 in favor of omega-6. And these omegas came from real whole foods. And there's an important distinction there, because these omegas are very highly susceptible to oxidative stress. And now we're getting our omega-6 from vegetable oils that aren't packaged with antioxidants and aren't packaged in whole foods. And you're essentially getting them from these bottles that have been stored in the grocery store for days, being exposed to light and oxidizing. And then you cook with these oils and you get the further oxidation. And then you ingest them, and it's for more oxidation. And what people need to realize is, not only is your red blood cell determined by the omegas that you consume and the omegas that form in the cell, this happens with our immune cells. Every single immune cell that has ever been tested, if you increase your intake of omega-3, the immune cell level of omega-3 goes up. Same thing with omega-6. If you have a high seed oil diet, your immune cells are filled with omega-6. And so it's pushing your immune cells into this inflammatory response when you're consuming these seed oils.
Yeah. And I think it's important for people to understand, we're not denigrating omega-6 fatty acids. There are actually several of them that are essential. You need them. Right. It's the ratio of omega-6 to omega-3. And it's the source that you get omega-6 fatty acids from. If you're getting your omega-6 fatty acids from meats and eggs and cheese and butter, those are ancestrally appropriate, species specific, that we're supposed to eat those. If you're getting your omega-6 fatty acids in far too high an amount from canola oil, from soybean oil, from safflower oil, peanut oil, mm-hmm. you have a very high omega-6 to omega-3 imbalance, and that hampers your immune system's ability to fight any infection, including this virus. We've got a question from Giuseppe. He wants to know your opinion of black seed oil and elderberry syrup.
So black seed oil is actually the only seed oil that I would ever consume. And you can get it actually cold pressed. And it does have some good immune boosting data actually on it. And in regards to elderberry, here's the key. The studies that have tested elderberry have tested only the ones that are standardized to 12 to 15% anthocyanins. So these polyphenols actually have these antiviral effects, whether it be inhibiting the binding of the virus or the replication. And most of these elderberries, they're very low in anthocyanins, and they probably won't work unless you get a standardized extract.
Yes, I love it. And I think, I don't know, I'd love your input on it. When you start talking about things like black seed oil and elderberry syrup and all these other things, I think they do help. I think they do play a small part. But they in no way overshadow a bad diet.
No way.
Literally, the bad diet is the 80% that you need to be working on. If you would also like to take some black seed oil and some elderberry syrup, I think that's fine. But do not be deluded into thinking that if you bought this really nice elderberry syrup or this black seed oil, that somehow cancels your bad diet. It definitely does not. Do you agree with that and have anything to add?
I totally agree, because nothing is going to, in regards to those type of supplements, going to replace a nutrient dense diet. And the reason I say that is because, and this again, you won't hear this on the news. If you are deficient in vitamin D, okay, which 1 billion people globally are deficient in, it increases your risk of dying from COVID by 15-fold. And if you are vitamin D insufficient, which half the global population is, it increases your risk of dying from COVID by 2 to 3-fold. So this is a huge, and we have control of our nutrient levels, and that comes through our diet.
Yeah. And that was, since you brought up vitamin D, let's segue to that next. I think that's a very important conversation to have. Vitamin D supplementation for many of us, if you're not able to get a strong enough sun bath with enough minutes in the day. And here in Tennessee, in the United States, that's not going to happen here in November. I could get out in the heat of the day, and I'm just not going to get the intensity of UV radiation that I need to make enough vitamin D. And so I would encourage everyone to eat from the vitamin D rich foods that I made a YouTube video about. And then supplement. If you live in Europe, in what, Minnesota?
I'm actually in New York right now. So yeah.
Okay, yeah. So you're getting no vitamin D at all in November. Yeah, there's just no way. You could walk around naked all day, and not only would you get a citation, but you wouldn't get any vitamin D either. Right. So don't do that. That'd be bad. So let's talk about vitamin D supplements to get us through the winter. What kind of vitamin D? How much? How often? What's your take on the vitamin D question?
So what people need to understand is there's several nutrients beyond just vitamin D that if you're deficient in, you're at a much higher risk of dying or having a poor COVID outcome. All of these nutrients are particularly really only high in animal foods. And I stress this in the book. I promote an animal-based diet in the book. And really this comes down to, for vitamin D, your best sources are going to be fish and pastured eggs for vitamin D. Now I do add Rosita cod liver oil as well. And the reason I do that is because it's balanced with vitamin A and it provides good omega-3s, and it's more of a whole food animal-based way to get vitamin D.
Yep. And I think that's an excellent, here's the vitamin D supplement that I take through the winter. It's just off Amazon. I don't even want you to know the brand. Just make sure to get vitamin D3, not vitamin D2, and make sure that it is in a gel cap with either olive oil, avocado oil, or coconut oil. Do not get it with soybean or canola oil, because again, we're back to the omega-6s. And in the winter, when I just can't get enough sun, I take 5,000 units a day, sometimes 10,000 units a day. Well, how many units do you try to take in addition to what you get from your animal-based diet?
Typically, I'll do about 2,000 international units per day. That's what I kind of for.
Have you checked your vitamin D25 levels to make sure that's adequate?
So here I did a little test on myself, and I was like, I'm not going to eat. I'm not going to take any vitamin D supplements. I'm not going to take my cod liver oil. I'm just going to get sun. And I was getting 30 minutes of good, adequate sunlight, and I was at a sufficient level, 33 nanograms per ml. So for people who don't know, typically a sufficient vitamin D level is really 31 nanograms per ml or higher. So I was able to do that just with sunlight. So if I add 2,000 IUs to that per day, I know that's going to bump me probably closer to 40, maybe even 50 nanograms per ml.
Yeah, I think that's excellent advice. And so everybody listening, I would highly encourage you to watch my video about vitamin D rich foods. Eat at least one of those a day, whichever. And there may be one or two you don't like. That's fine. You can pick from the others. Mm-hmm. And then take a trustworthy supplement that's in an ancestrally appropriate oil as a gel cap. And then get your level checked. And if you go to your doctor, make sure your doctor doesn't check a vitamin D1 25. Make sure they check a vitamin D25 level. That actually gives you the accurate picture of if your vitamin D sufficient or not. I like to keep my level from 50 to 75, and don't let any doctor tell you that that's too high. You're about to get toxic. That's rubbish. As long as your level's under 100, you are in the sweet zone from 50 to 75, and 33 is good, no doubt about it. But I would love for mine to be 53.
Absolutely. And most likely I haven't rechecked after I started supplementing, but I'm probably closer to that 53 range after supplementation, cod liver oil. What's really important too with vitamin D, we always got to look through the whole food aspect and the nutrients that are important to get with it. And so in order for the body to activate vitamin D, as you know, you need magnesium. Okay. So vitamin D doesn't really work that well if you're magnesium deficient. And you also need good vitamin K2. So what ends up happening is vitamin D controls 2,000 genes. Some of those genes increase the production of vitamin K-dependent proteins. Now you got to have the vitamin K though to allow those proteins to work. So K2, magnesium, and D are really something you want to think about in a comprehensive way.
I totally agree. Now Richard wants you to speak to salt's role in the immune system. And he says, thanks. He loves both of us. Thanks for the question, Richard. So I know you don't know a thing about salt, Dr. D. Give us the lowdown. I mean, salt's bad for you. It'll cause hypertension. Why would you want to eat salt for your to help influence your immune system?
So, I mean, that's funny. That's a good question from, you know, your viewer. And essentially, you know, I have a chapter in the book on, in the Immunity Fix on salt. And what's so interesting when I was doing research on this is not only is salt our most natural, oldest preservative for our food that we've consumed for, you know, thousands of years, it's also ends up being an antiviral, antibacterial in the body. So in regards to what salt actually does in our body, if we want to make up stomach acid and we want to form stomach acid, we need something called hydrochloric acid, which is literally composed of chloride, which is 60% of salt. And you can't just make this mineral. It is essential. You only can get it through salt. And so how we kill pathogens, first line of defense against what we consume is hydrochloric acid. And when you go on a low salt diet, that will reduce your stomach acid, and that will reduce your ability to break down food and absorb any nutrients. So right away, we need to think high stomach acid is essential for anyone to get nutrition from their diet, and that comes down to salt. Now, the other interesting thing is our white blood cells use salt to kill pathogens. So the neutrophil will actually use something called hypochlorous acid, which again is composed of chloride, to kill pathogens. And once the immune cell has killed a pathogen, it literally uses salt to then reduce the inflammation. So it will, the neutrophils will then spit out something called taurine chloramine. So it binds taurine with chloride, and that helps clean up, you know, cytokine pro-inflammatory things after the killing. So essentially we use salt to kill pathogens and to reduce the inflammation after the immune system has killed pathogens.
I love it. We got a bunch of questions here. You spoke about magnesium and it's absolutely essential. I totally agree. Any recommendations for magnesium, how much we should try to get a day? I've got a YouTube video about magnesium rich foods. And that's where I would encourage you to try to get the most magnesium. But some of us might need to supplement. What's your recommendation and thoughts on that?
So estimates from the Paleolithic diet have estimated that we used to consume anywhere from 600 to 1,000 milligrams of magnesium per day. And the average American is only consuming 250. So we're really anywhere from 400 to, you know, 800 milligrams below what we used to consume. And then the real issue is that 75% of us have high insulin levels or insulin resistance, preventing us from even utilizing the magnesium. So you got to fix the insulin resistance first, because magnesium is an insulin sensitive mineral. To get it into the cell, same with potassium, cells got to be insulin sensitive. Fix that, your need for magnesium goes down. Go on a carnivore diet and drop inflammation, need for magnesium goes down. So people who are taking a ton of magnesium, a lot of those people are on your standard American diet because it's just depleting them of that. Go on an ancestral appropriate diet, the need maybe only be 400 milligrams per day.
And did you catch that, folks? So you can take the most expensive, best formulation of magnesium in the world, and if your diet is not a proper human diet, you're not able to even utilize that expensive magnesium. And I don't think you need an expensive magnesium. I think there's any number of good sources. We've got several questions about that. Magnesium citrate is a great formulation if you tend to be constipated.
Right.
So there's that. If you tend to have bowels that are more loose, then I would stay away from magnesium citrate and maybe go with the magnesium stearate or malonate. I use Keto Chow's mineral drops and electrolyte drops, and they have an excellent ionic source of magnesium in them that's readily absorbed if you're on the proper human diet and eating a very, very low carbohydrate diet so that you don't have chronic hyperinsulinemia. Any of these magnesiums are going to be absorbed and used very well, but you want to tailor your magnesium intake to other symptoms that you might have or other issues that you might have. You don't want to be taking magnesium citrate if you have IBS you're more prone to diarrhea. Magnesium citrate will not be your friend. But for other people, it'll be their best friend because it'll help them be more regular and go every day. Let's talk about just eating. Let's talk about the diet more since I keep harping about that. eating what dietary, just rough global dietary recommendations would you make in order for us to have an optimized immune system?
I do have a food pyramid in the immunity fix, and you know, the first level is based off of pasture, meat, and eggs. And the reason why is because meat is so high in protein, vitamin B12, zinc, and iron. Extremely, all of those are super important for immune health. And then the pasture eggs, they're so important because they help bring in omegas, they help bring in choline, iodine, selenium, which is important for not just thyroid health, but also immune health function.
Absolutely.
So pairing eggs with pastured meat and making sure the eggs are pastured eggs. I cannot, you know, emphasize this enough, because pastured eggs have 3 to 4 times the amount of vitamin D compared to a regular egg. So eggs are very important to get the vitamin D as well. So once you start with that base, you can start building and picking. But really, the next level up in the food pyramid of the immunity fix is seafood. Okay, so shellfish. And either sardines or wild salmon for the omega-3s, for a little bit more vitamin D. So it's an animal-based diet is going to get you really all of those nutrients that you really need. Now, you can sort of add some berries. You can add some vegetables for vitamin C if you want it boosts the vitamin C level a little bit. And then we talk about salt and magnesium and nutrients and things like that. But you know, that really covers a lot, especially organs too. We have liver for copper, folate, a little bit of more manganese. So liver is very important. I get my liver as a blend. So what I'll do is I do 75% muscle meat with 25% split in half between liver and heart. And that'll get you the CoQ10 that you need and other nutrients that are lacking in muscle meat.
Yeah, grinding your ground beef with liver, that's an excellent way to get liver. If you don't like liver, I promise you, you put some salt and pepper on that, you will not be able to taste the liver. And I've been doing that for quite a while. You can use beef liver, you can use pork liver, sheep's liver, or chicken liver. Grind it in with your beef and then just cook it as you would otherwise. It's an excellent source of all the superfood multivitamin mineral that's in liver. And then the CoQ10 and other vitamins that are in the heart, if you can find some heart to blend in as well. I mean, that's literally the perfect burger. Terry wants to know, she wants a link to your book. I've got my copy right here. I'm reading right now. Terry, there's a link on Facebook. It's up there. And on YouTube, it's down there. So whichever platform you're watching on, I put a link to the book in the show notes. What else do you really want to help the listeners understand, Dr. D?
So going through some of the other nutrients that were eye-opening was selenium. And our soil is so depleted, and a lot of our vegetables are so depleted in selenium now. So it used to not be that big of an issue, but over the past 50 to 70 years, it's starting to resurface. So a billion people globally are selenium deficient, 2 billion are iodine deficient, 2 billion are zinc deficient, because they're not eating an animal-based diet. And that's really what it comes down to. And if you are deficient in selenium, the studies show you're at a 5-fold higher risk of dying from COVID and a 3-fold higher risk of having a poor COVID outcome. And so again, selenium equals eggs. Think of that. Think of shellfish as well. And the other one is zinc. So zinc is, I mean, really, if you're not eating animal foods, your zinc is going to be in the tank. And we know that zinc is probably the most important mineral when it comes to immunity.
Absolutely. I love it. And that's why I actually worked with Keto Chow to come up with a mineral drop that had all of these minerals that the soil is so depleted in. And there's the soil depletion issue, but then there's also the vegetable breeding issue. Over the centuries, we've bred fruit and vegetable to be very big, very pretty, very colorful, very sweet tasting, but nobody literally, and this, I mean, I guess it makes sense, but you would think that somebody would have thought of this along the way. Nobody thought to breed for nutrition.
No.
They just wanted bigger, prettier, tastier apples, but nobody ever stopped to think, well, are we making them less nutritious? And turns out they actually were making them significantly less nutrient packed, but they're big and beautiful and they taste really good. Let's talk about fasting, intermittent fasting, and how that relates to our immune system. I know there's a good chapter in the book about that. And if anybody's saying, oh, you know, carnivore's too expensive, keto's too expensive, one of the things that cuts the cost drastically is to implement some intermittent fasting in with your keto or carnivore diet. I do this every day. It's just part of my routine now. I don't even think about it. So tell us, how does fasting help optimize our immune response?
So essentially, Walter Longo, his group has shown that in animals that when they fast, it can essentially reset the immune system. And in humans, we see that this can happen within about 2 to 3 days of fasting. So if you do like a 2 to 3 day fast every 2 to 3 months, this may help reset the immune system. So essentially, when you're feasting, your body is growing. When you are fasting, your body is in repair mode, essentially breaking down old proteins, old immune cells, and building new ones. And really, that's what, you know, we sort of mention in the book. If you're looking for a sort of immune reset, that's like a 2 to 3 day fast, maybe once every 2 to 3 months. If you're looking to do just intermittent fasting as a healthy way of eating, then you simply just cut out breakfast or cut out dinner. And now you're down to 2 meals instead of 3 to 4. I mean, most people are eating 6 meals a day. So, I mean, if you get down to 2, you're doing pretty good.
Yep. Lucy, I have a link to the Daily Minerals. It'll be up here on Facebook and down there on YouTube. Laurel says, is chicken meat equal to beef meat? I know my opinion on that, but I'd love yours.
No, chicken is not beef, right? So
right. Chicken is still a very healthy food for humans, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, so what's so important about beef is the B12, right? You're not going to get the levels of B12. And not only that, the chicken can be particularly high in omega-6, whereas beef, no, it will not be. And actually, beef can be pretty high in omega-3. And really, this is an important point. I want people to understand the difference with regenerative farming, not only getting vegetables from a regenerative farm and being higher nutrients, but same thing with the animal foods. And I posted a study a couple days ago showing that if you have a regenerative farm, for every pound of carcass on a regenerative farm, it's -6.15 carbon. It's net carbon negative. I want people to understand this. That when you heal the soil through regenerative farming, through animals grazing, and not just decimating the grass, it's called adaptive multi-paddock farming. Yep. Essentially, they just go through different lots and they don't destroy the land. It can be net carbon negative. And so that's so important that I want people to understand that if you eat pastured animal foods, that you are supporting the planet. And it's not just about it being healthier, which it is. You're not supporting monocropping and you're not supporting these chemical companies.
100% agree. Yeah. And Nisha and I were actually putting our money where our mouth is. She inherited a farm when her grandfather passed away, God rest his soul. And we're in the process of converting that fallow farm that into a managed intensive grazing where we rotate. We're going to have sheep, we're going to have pigs, maybe some cattle, and we're going to rotate them like it used to happen with the migration of the bison and all that. And we're going to literally be making the most healthy food we can make for us and Beckett and all of our extended family. But at the same time, we're improving the soil. And any soil agronomist can tell you that there's tons of minerals locked up in the soil. But unless you have all the fungi there and you have the earthworms and you have all the bacteria, the multitude of life. I heard somebody say that in one handful of soil, there's literally billions of organisms in healthy soil. But right. When you pick up a handful of monocrop soil, it's a wasteland. There's nothing there because of all the herbicides and pesticides and all everything else. And so we're actually going to start doing that. So it makes me happy when I hear you talking about rotational grazing. I love it that you know about that. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, for everybody listening, if you're like, yeah, but we don't have anybody that grows beef or eggs like that anywhere near us, I bet you're wrong. Okay. If you will jump on a search engine and type in grass-fed, grass-finished, or pastured chicken, beef, pork, and then the big city that's near you. So, you know, Denver, LA, Raleigh, whatever, wherever you're at in the world, I guarantee you that within 100 miles, there is a small ranch, there's a small farm who are growing fruits and veg and who are raising meat in the proper method. And you, and like Dr. D said, you're going to get so much more omega-3, so much more vitamin D, so much more of the minerals that you just otherwise you'd be deficient in. When you let a cow be a cow and eat grass and you don't force them in a feedlot, they are able to build soil, sequester carbon in the soil, and also turn grass, something that we could never eat and get nutrition from, they can turn that in to succulent ribeye and oxtail that give us literally all the vitamins and minerals and fatty acids and amino acids we need for optimal function and optimal immune function. What about exercise, Professor? Let's talk about exercise and how it affects our immune system. What's worse, no exercise at all or too much exercise? Where's the sweet spot? What do you say?
Yeah, in the book, we cover sort of that sweet spot. And essentially, it's about an hour. If you go beyond an hour of intense exercise, you can't ever do that. It's just that you are at a higher risk of upper respiratory tract infections, anywhere from 2 to 6-fold. If you don't get good exercise, you're at about a 50% higher risk of an upper respiratory tract infection. So that sweet spot is about 45 minutes to maybe an hour of moderate to intense exercise, maybe 3 to 5 times a week. And it's not just about cardio. You got to do some type of resistance training to build the muscle, build your bones, build your insulin sensitivity. And that comes through either lifting weights or resistance bands.
Tammy wants to know what the name of the book is. Tammy, it's The Immunity Fix. I've got a link up here on Facebook, down there on YouTube that you can click. It'll take you straight to Amazon so that you can get a copy of this book. Doc, do you have an Audible version coming out soon?
Maybe in a couple of months. We haven't decided yet if we're going to do it, but if we do, I'll definitely let your community know.
Please do. All of us with ADD, we need an Audible version, okay? We can't just sit still and read a book. We have to be doing at least 3 things at once, including listening to your book on Audible. So I think you independently published this book, which I think is awesome. But that also makes it a little bit more of hoops to jump through, and also a little bit more financially speaking to get an Audible version out of this. So, but please try it. All right, the ADD folks in your audience really want you to do that. Let's take a few questions, guys. Now's the time. If you want to get a question answered from me or Dr. D, please type it in the comments now, and we will be happy. Oh, we got somebody from Cape Town. Hey, Yolan, how you doing? Thanks for joining us. Thanks for sharing this. Here's Pacer from Scotland. Yeah, Tammy says, come on, Dr. D, get on the stick. Audiobook, please.
All right. Fair enough.
There you go right there. Oh, Valerie said if you send her a copy, she'll read it to you. So there's an Audible. She'll just follow you.
No, I got to do it.
Okay. Bill says, what's important for immune health for a post-diabetic? Now, I could sum this up very quickly, but I'm going to let you take it.
For post-diabetic, what's important for immune health? Okay.
Go ahead, doctor.
Drop refined carbs, right? Drop refined sugars. Drop omega-6 seed oils. So you get rid of those three. Now your immune cells can start utilizing those nutrients that Ken and I have been talking about. Animal-based diet, right? You can add some vegetables and fruits if you want, but animal-based. And that includes pastured meats, pastured eggs, wild seafood, and some type of organs. Hopefully that helps.
It does help. And so basically, Bill, every single thing we've talked about in this video today applies to all human beings. Everybody on the planet is going to have a more robust immune system if they follow these things. So this is not just for a particular audience. This is if you're a human, this is going to help you. If your dog is watching this will help your dog as well. If your cat is watching this will also help your cat. I think there's been a couple of case reports of cats contracting COVID. I'm not sure. Steve says he eats 16 ounces of chicken liver once a week. Is that safe or is that toxic? I think probably Steve's mother-in-law said that much liver is dangerous.
So what I try to do is I try to do 1 ounce of beef liver a day. I don't try to go too much over that. There are some studies, if you get to the 50,000 level per day within 6 months, that could potentially, it's more theoretical.
That's right.
But yeah.
Yeah. And so, Steve, my answer to that would be Eat your chicken liver, my friend. Enjoy it as often as you want, because one of the things I look for is anytime I recommend a certain food or a certain supplement, I always go to the literature and I look for case reports of overdoses, right? And so and if anybody out there knows of a case report, please send it to me and I will stand corrected. Mm-hmm. There has not been a single case report ever recorded in the entirety of the human nutrition and medical literature of someone developing toxic levels of any of the fat soluble vitamins, vitamin A, D, E, or K, from eating chicken liver, beef liver, pork liver, sheep liver, goose liver. I cannot find a single case report where somebody became vitamin A toxic. And that's the one we most commonly worry about. Right. But Dr. D's right. There are theoretical concerns.
Right.
But when the rubber meets the road, there's not been a single person that's ever been diagnosed with vitamin A toxicity because they were eating too much chicken liver or too much beef liver or too much pork liver. I personally don't think it's possible. I think that if you're eating a low carb diet, either keto, ketovore, carnivore, and you get to the point where you're about to become vitamin A toxic, I think that your inflammation levels are low enough and you're in tune with your body and your diet enough that you would develop an aversion to liver long before you ever develop vitamin A toxicity, because that's the way it works. If we turn cows out to pasture, like we're supposed to, like we were talking about earlier, they'll nibble this, they'll nibble that, they eat a bunch of that. But they, if they have a salad bar out there in the pasture to eat from, to choose from, they never develop toxicity from eating the wrong thing. It's only when you put them in a paddock and they have to just eat everything. And so they eat up all the stuff that they want. And then they're hungry, they have to eat the rest of the crap. Then they'll eat something that's not good for them. But if they have a smorgasbord to choose from, they don't do that. And I think that our species is just as ancestrally smart as all the animals in the wild. They know not to eat water hemlock, and they know not to eat, you know what I'm saying? I mean, they just know not to do that. Do they develop a taste aversion? I don't know how they know, but they just know. And I think human beings have that same ability. But if you're eating a high carbohydrate diet, you're inflamed, you've got hyperinsulinemia, I think your body's so inflamed and sick that you can't get feedback from it. So Steve, eat your chicken liver. I don't think there's any problem with that. And all the rest of you guys out there, if the liver tastes good, eat it. If you suddenly develop an aversion, like, oh, I've had enough of liver for a while, I would suspect that's your body telling you, yeah, your level's high enough. You need to back off for a minute. Let's see what else we got. Yep. There's another one, says the Audible is mandatory. You're going to be in trouble if you don't get an Audible version out. Let's see. Can you eat pate to get your liver intake? This is from Australia. Thanks, Kerry, for the question. What say you, Doc?
Well, for me, and we'll, I don't know if, how you do this, Ken, but it's just the blend. For me, I eat blends.
You just eat
muscle
the blend.
Meat. Yeah.
So I'm guessing you don't like liver, do you, Doc?
No, not particularly. No.
Yeah. And see, I used to hate it. Now I kind of like it. Okay. But I think pate is an excellent way to get your liver if you enjoy that. I think right. That Braunschweiger, I think liverwurst, liver cheese, all of these kind of, processed meats that have liver in them, they're not as good as eating pastured beef liver that you've just blended in. I think that's probably the best, probably eating it raw is best, but I'm not there yet. I don't know about you, but any way you can get liver into your body. And for people on a budget, a lot of the salamis and bolognese and like Vienna sausages, potted meat, a lot of those, they have liver and other organs in them. They don't put it on the label because they want you to think it's just, you know, all lean meat. But there's a lot of organs in that processed meat. And so that's why I'm a fan of processed meat. I don't care about the nitrates and nitrites. I just want you to eat your liver however I can get it down your gullet.
There you go.
Let's see what else. See if we've got another question or two. Oh, okay. Here, you'll like this question. George wants to know, are ice baths good for immunity? I think you talk about that in the book, don't you?
Yeah, we have a chapter on hot and cold. And yeah. I'm much more of a fan of hot. And the reason is because There's a few reasons. Evolutionarily, we evolved to in Africa to dump heat, and that's how we became persistent hunters. That's how we became human, essentially, is we lost our fur, we became bipedal, and we lost sweat, and we could cool off, right? And that allowed us to hunt animals for hours, but it's called persistent hunting. And this is sort of what most people don't realize, is that 90% of lion kills actually occur at night, because it's so they don't tolerate the heat very well. So this allowed us to sort of persistent hunt. And so our bodies are adapt to heat. Now, the first line of defense against an infection is a fever. And you can mimic that by elevating core body temperature, either going into a sauna multiple times a week or exercising in the heat or with a bunch of clothes on to boost core body temperature. And essentially how this works is it releases heat shock proteins, and heat shock proteins have these antiviral effects. So you don't want to be cold when you have an infection, even when you don't know it, right? You first get it, first propagates in the nose, in the mouth, and throat. And you don't want to be cold. You want to be hot.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think, you know, a lot of people think about the cryo tanks and they think about the saunas. And that's great if you can afford that. But, you know, I'm a poor boy from the South. I used to be broke as a joke. And so I would recommend that if you would like this hormetic effect from the heat, go sit in your car in the middle of summer for 20 minutes, yeah, or climb up in your attic and sit there for 20 minutes, or just go run in the sun. Anything that makes you sweat means that you have elevated your body temperature enough that you're getting this hormetic effect. Now, at higher temperatures, it's probably a little more significant. But my car gets pretty damn hot in the middle of summer here in Tennessee. I don't know about in Minnesota. Deborah's got a question about beef liver supplements. And for people who just freaking hate liver and you literally just want to throw up when you think about it, I love Dr. D's hack about blending it with beef and then frying it as a burger or a hamburger steak or making a meatloaf with it. I think that's a great idea. I'm a big fan of grass-fed beef liver from Ancestral Supplements. They freeze dry the liver, grind it up, put it in capsules. It does not taste like liver at all. Doesn't smell like liver either. And so six of those is like eating effectively 2 ounces of beef liver. And I think for people who abhor liver, until you learn to like it, because I want you to learn to like liver, it is an ancestral food. You could do something like that, or you could, and I've got a link to that in the notes, or you could use Dr. D's trick of blending it with your beef, and you can't taste it, I promise. When Danny Vega came to visit us, we did that with just 70-30 ground beef, half that, a quarter venison heart and a quarter venison liver that Nisha's dad, Pedro, had shot. And dude, those were the best hamburgers, and you could not taste anything. It just tastes like a hamburger. And that's a super meal. I mean, just imagine if you had to sit down and write out every vitamin and mineral and nutrient we got from those burgers. It was a superfood. Any closing thoughts, Doc? Tell us what we need to know.
Well, I think, what you and I have been trying to tell people, you have control of your immune health, because it comes down to you have control of your metabolic health and your nutrient status. And, you know, don't just think you either have a mask or you don't. That's not the case. You either have good health or you don't. And that's the key. That's the key for my key message in the book, too.
Oh, I totally 100% agree. So let's go back to the talking heads. Why wouldn't they say, you know, it looks like a lower carb diet is going to strengthen your immune system and also take some vitamin D. I mean, they could still talk about their vaccine and they could still talk about their antivirals. And that could be part of the conversation, but it's weird because they don't even want to make that even a tiny part of the conversation, at least on mainstream media. And I just don't get that. And that's why I love it that there are people out in the world like you writing books like this saying, hey, guys, it's kind of simple. You got to work on you. You got to build you properly with the proper building material. And when you do that, you're much stronger. And that means also your immune system is much stronger. So thank you so much for coming on today. And tell us again about your new book and where people can find it.
So the book is called The Immunity Fix. It's on Amazon. And people can also find it on my website, drjamesdinick.com, or you can follow me on Instagram or Twitter at Dr. James Dinick, D-I-N-I-C.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much, brother, for coming on today. You're welcome to jump into the comments. If people have questions that your expertise and specialty would answer, you're welcome to answer questions. Guys, I've got a link to his website, to his Facebook page, and to the book in the show notes, so you can check that out. And as always, the more thumbs this video gets, the more shares it gets, the more people that you help Dr. D. Nicolantonio and I to reach and to help and to potentially save. So thank you for doing those things. Thanks so much for the super chats and for the Facebook stars. You guys are the bomb diggity. We're going to sign off today. Thanks, Doc, for joining me. I'll see you next time.
All right, Ken. Thank you.